This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
We are celebrating our 45th anniversary by looking at our past and sharing precious recordings with you. This month, we'll listen to an interview with Art Dilworth, recorded in 1977 by KBOO's own George Page. We'll also hear a speech recorded in 1992 by Dick Gregory. Again, that's February the 6th at 6 p.m. here at KBOO Portland, your community radio station for 45 years.
Good morning, Cascadia. Today is Wednesday, February 6th, 2013, and you're listening to KBOO Portland, your community radio at 90.7 FM, KBOO.fm on the web. This morning, we have Dr. Margaret Flowers with us to talk about single-payer health care, not just for Oregon, but for all of America. The time is right, but whether we will have the national will to do the right thing, that's another question. And the other national ailment is, of course, offshoring of jobs. It's hit Oregon particularly hard. We're going to be also looking at the notorious white paper, white memo that has been floating around John Brennan's nomination. It's a very troubling piece of paper. Basically, it's informs American citizens and the rest of the world that, yes, in fact, that President Obama's Terror Tuesdays, in fact, have signed off on and are actively using a capability of targeting American citizens overseas for assassination. Now, if it's possible overseas, it's possible domestically. Just, and of course, as we see drones used overseas with disastrous results, and drones increasingly used domestically, and it's only a matter of time before we have an incident. First, though, the weather. Today we've got scattered rain for the most part, overcast skies and a high near 48, mild medium winds 6 to 10. For tonight, rain continuing, lows around 39, south winds 9 miles per hour. For tomorrow, showers, sprinkles throughout the day, highs 47. And for tomorrow night, again, a wet one, patchy fog, overcast skies, and a low around 35. We are going to forego the alternative weather for today. Compost your living room. It's the best thing you can do for yourself. Because we've got Dr. Margaret Flowers, and we also have Robert Naiman with Just Foreign Policy with us this morning to talk about single payer and targeted assassinations, all on the same show in 15 minutes. So first, I wanted to look briefly at, we hope to have Arthur Stamoulis on the show perhaps tomorrow to talk about offshoring jobs. The radical offshoring of jobs has battered Oregon in every possible way. When unemployment is high, environmental priorities are low. When the environment suffers, so there goes tourism. The damage done to the environment has reached a point where it's probably irreversible. And, of course, another irreversible effect is the destruction of social architecture when generation after generation to educational standards tank, resulting in poor, again, economic choices. When employment is low, cultural assets are eroded, and a punch-drunk populace is far more prone to resort to crime, further siphoning off limited tax revenues. Offshoring does a great deal more damage than removing jobs from people who had hoped and lived in that hope of making a future for themselves. And we want to move right along. We have incidents in Portland with the police. And again, this is a cost to society, both monetary and morally. the self-proclaimed European history buff, Mark Rogert, and criminally filed a tort claim against the city last month, prompting Christy Gavlin, Lieutenant Christy Gavlin, to do the same. And we also have into the mix Mike Kuykendall. All three are going at it tooth and nail, and we'll see what the fallout of that is. It just seems, though, to me that Mark Kroger's name crops up from all too frequently, and not in the assets side of the city's ledgers, more in the liabilities. Washington State's anti-NDAA bill was introduced with huge viral support, and in, of course, in California, the San Francisco Police Department continues to resist any sort of meaningful oversight of its partnership with the FBI's Joint Terrorism Task Force in that late great city. After the last year of pressuring Mayor Ed Lee into vetoing a strong oversight measure, signing off on a weaker version, the police department in San Francisco last week issued a required report activists have pointed out is grossly inadequate. We want to move straight on, though. There are this week, as the legislative session got underway, at least 1,000 people, as always underreported by mainstream media, as being nearly 1,000 people who would actually dare say that it was upwards of 1,000 people gathered in Salem to demand a single-payer system for the state of Oregon. And if Oregon can do it, and we do have a bit of a track record there, then why not the rest of the nation? Dr. Margaret Flowers has been an activist in this area for a number of years now, and we're delighted to welcome her to the KBOO Airways. Good morning. Thanks so much.
Good
for being
morning.
With us. We're so glad to have you back. Single payer, it doesn't go away, and there's a good reason for it, because we simply cannot afford any other option. Can you speak a little bit about what has prompted the resurgence in support for single payer?
Well, first, I'd like to congratulate the single payer activists in Oregon for having such a successful rally. It's absolutely imperative. Right now, in this time of exaggerated deficit talk, we have to focus on the reality that if we want to address our economic crises and our health care crisis in this country, we must do that through a single-payer health care system. It really is at the fundamental, you know, it's really basic to solving both of these crises. Kevin Zeese and I just published an article this morning in truthout.org that says to solve the crises, the economic crisis, we must solve poverty, retirement, and health insecurity. The data, you know, more and more people are becoming aware that the Affordable Care Act was just a continuation of this, you know, for-profit, fragmented, unequal system that we have in this country right now, that we're adding more public dollars into that broken system. It's not a solution. It's not going to take us in the direction we need to go of affordable, comprehensive, lifelong, universal health care. A Medicare for all type of system, or a single payer, publicly funded system, is a way to achieve those goals of bringing everybody up to the same standard of access to high quality health care.
Just one final question before we let you go and get some information on where people can find out more about this. Is it conceivable that this is going to be fought state by state until we do reach a national tipping point where it's simply unavoidable that we will adopt a single-payer system?
That's, of course, a difficult question and something that the single-payer movement is struggling with. There are a number of states that are trying to pursue single-payer at the state level. There are significant barriers to enacting a true single-payer system at the state level. Our ideal would be to push for it at the national level so that every person in the country, not just those who live in a state that is, you know, moving in that direction, but every person can have access to high-quality health care. But certainly these state-level efforts increase the awareness, build the movement for a national health program, and will hopefully improve the health laws that exist in those particular states so that more people can get access to care.
Thank you so much for that, Dr. Flowers. We're very, very pleased to have you back as a guest on the show today. You want to give the listeners some sources to go to?
Sure. I think, you know, it's important to continue to organize for single payer. You can do that through healthcare-now.org. If you want to learn more about it, I suggest PNHP.org. And I hope that people will read our article on truthout.org this morning. It says we must solve the crises of poverty retirement, and health insecurity.
And we'll put a link to that story on the KBOO website too. So many thanks for that. My guest has been Dr. Margaret Flowers, longtime activist, along with Kevin Zeese on this and other issues of social and cultural concern. Thanks again for that. We're going to move straight along to our next guest is Robert Naiman with Just Foreign Policy, one of the absolute, I don't want to say authority, the go-to person on some of these national security issues that, yes, they affect us. Yes, we are responsible, but they have had extraordinarily damaging effects on people overseas, and in that we are, in fact, killing them. Attorney General Eric Holder and John Brennan, Obama's top terrorism advisors, and Brennan, of course, the current nominee to lead the CIA, have argued that the president is and should be vested with the power to assassinate American citizens overseas. There's been a memo circulating now. And Robert, thank you so much for being with us. Can you talk a little bit about this white paper that's been making the rounds?
So I think there's two things that everybody who cares about U.S. foreign policy should know about this white paper. The first thing is that the White House, in releasing this white paper about the legal justification for a drone strike, has not complied with the demands of a bipartisan group of senators, 11 senators, led by Senators Wyden and Merkley of Oregon, demanding the legal memos giving the administration's legal justification for conducting drone strikes to kill American citizens overseas. So they have not complied with the demand. They have not released these memos. What they've released instead, this white paper, sort of a summary of what's in those memos. So it's related. The New York Times reports that it tracked it closely. So, number one, they haven't complied with the demand. But on the other hand, it's incredibly important from the point of view of people who would like to see something done about this policy to understand that these 11 senators, you know, they sent their letter on February 4th. A couple days later, this white paper surfaced. This shows that senators can do something. Senators can do something about this policy. And tomorrow, John Brennan is testifying before the Senate Intelligence Committee in his confirmation hearing to head the CIA. So now we know senators can move the policy. And there in Oregon, you have, you know, the two best senators, Wyden and Merkley. They did something. What else could they do? What else could they lead on? They've asked for the legal justification. They could ask, how many civilians have been killed? John Brennan, tell us, before we'll confirm you as head of the CIA, how many civilians have been killed in U.S. drone strikes since 2004? And, in fact, we have an action on our website. People can go to justforeignpolicy.org and write their senators about the other questions that Brennan should be asked. We also have a petition up on signon.org. Senate, make Brennan come clean on drone strike. So we have a unique window right now, this unprecedented attention on the policy because of Brennan's hearing and the release of the white paper. And, of course, the hearing is tomorrow. Then there's still the full consideration by the Senate. So anybody who cares about this policy in the United States, the minimum thing that they should do before looking themselves in the mirror is contact their senators. Call them, send them a letter, sign a petition, take the action through our website. So many ways to get involved, but it's so important that senators hear that Americans care about this policy, care about the rule of law, care about democratic oversight of U.S. Foreign policy.
Robert, thank you.
We have a unique window right now.
This is it, isn't it? I mean, we may never have all these elements assembled in the same room at the same time. It is critically important. We'll put links to all of that for listeners to follow up on. It is critical. If there ever was something which is time dependent. Time focus is now. So I want to thank you so much for that. My guest has been Robert Naiman. I'll put his piece also on the KBOO website. It's a terrific piece. You should read to have a look at that. If you want to have a bit of insight into what actually is going on behind the scenes. It's kept pretty secret, but Robert Naiman has done a fine job of detailing what we know of the proceedings, and thanks again for that. This has been Air Cascadia for Wednesday, February 6, 2013. Kurt Lauer engineered the show today. Kathleen Stevenson is the KBOO AM News and Public Affairs Director. I'm Chris Andre. Keep get the facts, know your rights, take a stand. Thanks for listening and stay tuned.
Today on Flashpoints, a 16-page white paper prepared by the Obama DOJ justifies the president's power to target Americans for assassination without due process. We'll speak to a legal blogger and a constitutional lawyer about the implications of the memo. Also, we'll have our weekly report on occupied Palestine. I'm Dennis Bernstein. All this straight ahead on Flashpoints. Stay tuned. In Berkeley, I'm Dennis Bernstein. You're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. Well, NBC released a multi-paged white paper prepared by the Obama DOJ that purports to justify Obama's power to target even Americans for assassination without due process. The reactions have been swift, although people know that a kill list has existed, has been reported on anonymously in the major papers. The head of the ACLU's National Security Project, Haina Shamsi, says this is a profoundly disturbing document, and it's hard to believe that it was produced in a democracy built on a system of checks and balances. She has a lot more to say about it. Somebody who's been following the story very closely is a blogger, Marcy Wheeler. She writes on legal issues, and she's got two pieces about the timing of the white paper that just released, and